wait a minute. If I put this on, am I going to die? Like, is there a chance I die? I'm like, I'll be fine. Come on. So I finally felt what it was like. It was jolting. And that's when I knew, okay, I've got something.
Top leaders, meaningful conversation, actionable advice, bulldoze complacency, ignite inspiration, create impact. Produced by Southwestern Family of Companies. This is the Action Catalyst.
Are you interested in advertising with the Action Catalyst? Our listeners could be hearing about your brand right here, right now. For details, shoot us an email at info@theactioncatalyst.com.
Hello, Action Catalyst listeners. Today, our guest is Alex Neist, the founder of Hostage Tape Sleep Enhancement Tape, as well as an entrepreneur and former professional quarterback in the Arena Football League. Recently, he has also founded Neist Media with a mission to build e-com brands with passion. Alex, nice to meet you.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Look, we're honored to have you on. I love focusing kind of on early days a little bit in this interview too. We have a lot of business owners on here. They're going to be really curious about the scalability of what you built. So you got started wearing a pads and helmet.
Yes. My first love was football. I was a football player. So there's this great story when I was probably 13 or 14 years old, somewhere around there. I was at a birthday party and they gave everybody these packs of Topps football cards. I wasn't really much of a football player back then. And so we got these cards and we opened them up. And the very last card that I got was a Joe Montana card. And everybody around the table was like, oh my God, you got a Joe Montana card. He's the best quarterback in the league. Like a light bulb went off for me. So then it was at that moment I knew I want to be like that. Everything I did was breathing football, living football. And then my dad built the net. We lived out in the country in southern Minnesota. So out in the country, then we had a pasture where my dad built this net where I would be outside all day from morning till when the sun went down, just throwing the ball. And even before I had the net, what I used to do was I would go out and I would just throw the ball at all the trees. And then that prompted my dad to be like, all right, son, you're killing all the trees. Let me build a net for you. So, man, I wanted to be, at the time, the next Joe Montana. And then as I got older, that was the era of Kurt Warner, right? This underdog story. And I'd always kind of had an underdog mentality, an underdog story for me, too, that I love the Kurt Warner story. So then I always wanted to be the next Kurt Warner. Nobody ever thought I was going to go play college football. And then I went and I played college football. I went to the University of Minnesota. I was a Gopher. And then from college, I wasn't a starter. I was a backup. So nobody ever thought, like, what kind of a backup actually continues on and keeps playing? But I had a mentality much like Kurt Warner did where I knew I was good enough. I knew I could play. I was able to get into Arena Football. I was always that guy that nobody ever, everybody counted me out. But then I always had a chip and I'm like, I can do it. I know I can. I had this like delusional confidence. But look, man, in this day and age, when you're playing with a playbook that's this thick, there's so many options and there's so many reads and things are so complicated. You have to have a smart guy. Yeah. You got to have a guy who can take all that and learn a new language and can think on the fly and can go into a meeting and command the room. Because the reality is this. You've got a $1 billion organization behind the guy. Those guys in that room are not going to follow him if he's not working harder than everybody else. And he doesn't actually show that, wow, that guy knows what he's doing. He could coach everybody in the offense, everybody in the room, everybody in the huddle. They have to be able to follow that guy. And if they can't follow that guy and trust that guy, it's not going to work. A great example is Johnny Manziel. You're seeing a lot of more media come out, especially with the Netflix documentary, that dude was so talented, but it was obvious why he failed. He just was not doing the work. He was not studying, not doing film, not doing all the things. And then he lost the entire locker room, lost all the coaches, and it was obvious.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a good pivot, actually, to talking about business. So talk about the transition from athletics to business.
I think it's an easy transition in the sense that when you're an athlete, especially a high-level athlete, and you make it to college sports or some level of pro sports, you know what it takes to actually put all the work in and day out, the grind.
Yes.
And that's the thing that most people don't understand about being an entrepreneur and building a business. They look at it from Instagram and go, oh, wow, look at all the amazing things they're doing. Look at what they've accomplished. Like, it's like an overnight success. But what they don't see is what all of us athletes have gone through is that, dude, you're going to practice every single day. You're working out every single day. You're doing all the little things every single day that then pays off every weekend, every Friday night. So it's a very similar mentality of what we need to do on a daily basis, that grind you have to do. You don't need motivation. You just need dedication and you need consistency to continue to do the right things day in and day out. And you're going to fail, and that's okay, right? And that's another piece of it, is that being a great entrepreneur and a great athlete is learning how to be able to use failure. You know you're going to fail. And it's using that failure then to learn from it, to then get better and try not to make those mistakes again, keep moving forward and keep stacking. I tell you, if there's one thing that my mom taught me, and I say this to my kids, you can accomplish anything in life you want. You just have to be willing to work for it. And if you're willing to work for it, you can do it and you can accomplish it and you can make your own luck to get to it.
That's good. I know it wasn't like a complete transition right into the businesses that you're known for now, you know, Hostage Tape, which we'll talk about in a little bit, but you kind of had this like pivot point of getting into sports video analytics, which was related, right?
Yeah. You know, when you're an athlete, so I was also a coach, like when you're playing arena football, like we don't make tons and tons of money. Your goal is to try to climb to make it to the NFL. Sure. And that was obviously my goal. And so while I'm doing that, I'm also coaching football. I was a high school football coach for 15 years. And so when you're a quarterback and you're a coach, you're a student of the game. And so as a student of the game, back then, this was in the early 2000s, mid-2000s, right, where the internet wasn't what it is today. You weren't watching video and interacting with software in the browser the way that we are now and we're used to it. So back then, everything was very, all right, hey, I'm gonna mail you a DVD,
yeah,
right? I'm going to meet you at McDonald's and we're going to hand off tapes. It was very rudimentary in how we used to exchange information, video, and study things. At the dawn of that was certainly Netflix was starting to change and grow. YouTube was starting to change. All these things were happening. And so I knew, all right, there's something here online with being able to take video and share it. So we actually just started out as it was a file sharing site, Game Exchange, exchanging game video. But then we pivoted and we said, let's actually take that though and add more to it. Let's actually build an application in the browser that people are going to interact with. We pioneered this concept of using humans to watch the video and tag it. So that way then as a coach, you played a game on a Friday night, you woke up the next day, your game was entirely tagged with data points that you could search and pull up to be able to teach your players more effectively. Because most teams, especially the Olympic sport teams, they've got one, maybe two coaches on staff. How the heck are they going to take a 90-minute match, add data to it so they can actually use it with their players? Most don't. Most didn't at the time. They were just like, all right, we lost. Anything we can learn? I don't know. Let's move on because they got a game in 2 days. That really catapulted us into where, you know, we were doing 7 figures a year with that business. And then we bootstrapped it, ran it for 16 years. And then I sold it to a company out of Tel Aviv. That kind of led to ending that chapter of my life into a new chapter.
And tell me, like, if you know, there's this saying that, you know, so much of what you go through in life is preparing you for your moment when it comes, right? What was the preparation this business gave you?
Well, in 16 years, I failed an awful lot, right? When you run your own business, you fail a lot. And I was just fortunate enough to not fail too much that we were still in business and we lasted for 16 years. Or you could look at it as I failed so much that I was able to learn enough to stay in business for that long to then get to this point. But so I negotiated the deal. I negotiated it myself. I didn't have a broker or a banker or anybody. And I'll tell you, when you're an American negotiating with an Israeli, that's an interesting negotiation that most people are not prepared for. Because like, we're not, as Americans, we're not brought up in a culture of negotiating and haggling. We're just not prepared for that. They don't teach that. We should be teaching, you know, our kids, and they should be teaching that in school, how to negotiate. So shout out to this book, Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss.
Yeah.
He needs to read this book. This book changed my life. So when I read that book, it changed everything about how I approached business, how I approached my relationships. And then it really helped me set up being able to go in and negotiate that deal to sell the company. now I know the things that I need to learn when I build my next company that's going to be big. And I also learn, what do I not want to do? How do I not want to be? How do I not want to manage my people and lead my people? I learned all the a lot of things I don't want to do.
How did this come about? I mean, this seems like a departure from, you know, what you'd done previously.
Well, the story is actually this. 5 years ago, I thought I had everything, right? I had the business, the seven-figure-year business. I had my wife. We had a house. I had two kids. Then, literally 2 years after that, I lost all of it. I sold the business, and then I went through divorce because I was super laser-focused on the business. But also, I was a terrible snorer that had pushed my wife into the other bedroom. And a lot of people think, oh, you snore, sleep in a separate bedroom. That's great. It's not great. And no, it's not good for a relationship to be sleeping in separate bedrooms. I don't care what you think. It's not. I've been through it. And then I only saw my kids at the time. And then as a result, I had to sell the house and I was living in my aunt's basement. So then it was in that moment where, all right, I'm vesting out my equity and I'm at like my rock bottom moment. And I'm going, man, what do I need to do? What do I need to do to change, to work on myself? So I started with my sleep and I went down this rabbit hole of how can I improve it? How can I improve my snoring, my sleep, all of it? And I discovered this article written by James Nestor. And James Nestor wrote a best-selling book called Breath. And in this book, there's an experiment that they do where they go to Stanford Medical Center and they plug their nose for 10 days to see what would happen, both anecdotally and what the doctors would say. Throughout this 10 days, they develop sleep apnea, snoring like crazy, and dangerously low levels of blood oxygen. Once that's done, they unplug their nose, they tape their mouth, everything went away in a day. So when I read that, I went, is it really that simple? It's mouth breathing? Because as an athlete my whole life, they never taught us that. They never taught us the dangers of mouth breathing and the benefits of nasal breathing. And so I then went, okay, went on Amazon, I had no idea what to get, and I just bought some cheap stuff that, like, all right, we'll just try this out. And everybody, same reaction. Wait a minute. If I put this on, am I going to die? Like, is there a chance I die? And I'm like, I'll be fine. Come on. So I put it on. When I woke up the next day, I felt like a kid. I felt like my 14-year-old son, like the amount of energy that I had, because when you get poor sleep, it stacks. So I finally felt what it was like. It was jolting. And that's when I knew, okay, I've got something. And then on top of it, when you're like, we're going to call it hostage tape. They're like, the amount of pushback I got from that, a lot of people didn't like it. But when you have polarity in a brand and you're going to have people who love it, people who hate it, that's when you know you've got something good. Hostage tape? Why would you call it that? When I first started mouth taping, I used to warn my kids. I would say, hey, guys, I'm going to warn you. I'm going to put some tape on my mouth. All right, it's going to look like I'm being held hostage, so just don't freak out. But it's also tapping into this core emotion people feel. People feel held hostage by poor sleep or their partner, and they don't know what to do. And I knew you're going to scroll through your feed and you're going to see hostage tape. Whoa. And you're going to remember. You're never going to forget that. And people don't.
Yeah. I was just thinking, like, sometimes you, like, glance at it, maybe on, like, an ad, scroll down, and you're like, oh, wait, is this, like, the S&M feed at first?
Yeah.
And
oh, people are like, what, are they going to sell ball gags next?
But then, to your point, polarity causes you to read. And then as long as the science backs up the tool, it's compelling. What were the exercises that you took in exploring the marketability of this?
So there wasn't much that I did to, like, test. I just knew in my bones that this was it.
Huh.
The challenge, though, is that because it is a commodity, essentially, right? I mean, anybody can take the concept that we've made and try to sell it. But the real brilliance of it is creating this brand that we've created and this movement that we've created. We're the largest brand in the world. It's not even close. Like, if you look at the web statistics, nobody's even close to us. No competitor, nothing. What was amazing is a few weeks ago, Joe Rogan, he was talking to an MMA fighter on his pod, and the guy said, oh, yeah, you know, I'm mouth taping them at night. And he goes, oh, yeah, do you use hostage tape? So we've got the biggest person in the world equating a category to us.
Yeah.
In a matter of 2 years, we have taken over a category and we are the category. When somebody says mouth tape, oh, yeah, that's hot. You're hostage tape, right?
That is the hard part for sure.
The first year was my co-founder and I's all internal. We didn't hire an agency, didn't hire anybody else. And so it was that, me and him, And then I had hired on my head of support a few months after that, because if there's one thing I learned from my previous business as a SaaS company, your customer support, that has to be dialed in, has to be dialed in early. It was the three of us, you know, really for that whole first year. And I learned Facebook ads myself. I'd never done Facebook ads before, but I knew this was our ticket. And I learned how to do it. It took me 6 months and I learned how to do it. I struggled and fumbled and figured it out, but that's the way I'm wired as an entrepreneur. Like, I figure everything out and I identify what are the things that are going to move the needle the most. And I learned how to do those things. Now I completely understood it, because that was why I didn't want to go hire an agency, is I wanted to understand how the biggest thing that I was going to be spending my money on and the biggest thing that was going to move the needle, I needed to understand it, right? I wasn't going to hire somebody who had just some 24-year-old kid running our ads who didn't really care, right? He was just put on the project because we were paying that agency. He's not the one who took all of his money and he put it into this business, his sweat. You know, I put my life into this business, so I'm going to make sure that it works.
So, like, you have a valuable product, but you're creating a market in some ways because it's just not there yet. That wall of, like, I don't understand it.
Yeah, there's totally an education piece to our product for sure, because most people see it and they're like, this is stupid. But then it's like, oh, wait a minute. Most people here don't actually understand the difference between nasal breathing and mouth breathing. And this is why it's important. They're like, oh my God, I didn't even know that. So when it comes to branding, we've got a 25-person team. And when I hire my team, there's a very particular type of person that I like to hire. I like hiring optimistic people, people that have an optimistic mindset. And also, they're people who, they might be entrepreneurial. They might leave in 2, 3, 4 years and then start their own brands, because that's what I do. Like, those are the kind of people that I look for mostly. And I tell them all, hey, if you've got your own brand, your own idea, I'm totally cool with you working with it as a side hustle. I encourage it and I'm here to help. And because I know that you may not want to be here your whole life. You might want to eventually learn everything you can and then move off and do your own thing. And so right now I got two brothers, my head of growth and his brother. They've got a brand that they're working on. And it was funny, like, we were on a call one day and they had a name for the brand. I'm like, that doesn't work. Doesn't make sense. Like, the name of the brand didn't make sense for what they were making and where it was going. And his wife had said something and then I heard it and I went, that's it. And I said, you're going to do this, 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 and this with it. And it was like, holy crap, that's it. So part of it is there's years of experience that sometimes it takes to really be able to nail branding and know what's going to hit and what not hit. But in this day and age, you have to be able to get people's attention. You can't blend in. So you have to be willing to take the risk of making something that's polarizing. When you're building a brand, it has to stand out. You can't blend in to this wall of social content, right? Because there's so much of it. It's so easy for somebody to start a Shopify account, to go on and put a brand on, start doing a Facebook ad. It is so much easier nowadays. Be willing to put your neck out there. If you believe in it and you believe it's a great product and you believe it's going to, maybe it's going to change people's lives. Maybe it's going to be life changing. Maybe it's going to be this or that. Be willing to do it. Be willing to take a risk and be polarizing, be different.
Good point. I mean, to really, like, emphasize, because most people struggle, I feel, with the need to be liked. But if you're liked by everyone, you're loved by none.
And that's the other side of this, right? Exactly that. It's too many people will go, wow, I want to make sure that, like, this person likes it and this person, everybody, like, no, that's the exact opposite you should do. It's assuming the TAM's big enough, assuming that, all right, this isn't like 1,000 people. Assuming you have a large enough TAM, and for the audience, TAM is your total addressable market, your total number of people that you think are actually your demographic that you could sell this to. Assuming it's big enough, go after those people. Religiously, hardcore, go after them. And that's what we did. We went, all right, we're going to go after men who are 25 to 50, right? Those middle-aged men who, they have facial hair, they're growing facial hair, and they're probably married and they're having trouble sleeping and they're probably pushing their wives into the other bedroom. We went hardcore after that guy. And now, as a result, what you start to see happen when you take that approach as a brand, because you really nail a demographic, now all of a sudden, everybody starts, and it's successful, everybody else starts to see and go, oh, that's actually really interesting. I see how it's helping that person. I wonder if it could help me. And now, ironically, 25% of our customer base is women. Mm. Women are buying it and using it.
Wow. It's kind of like Stanley Cups.
Yeah, totally. Right?
That's awesome. Just a couple of rapid fire questions that I think is going to be really good for our listeners, Alex. One question that I have for you, that if you can like concisely answer, everybody has a different definition for what success means to them. That can mean so much to somebody. So for you, what does success mean? And when do you know if you've achieved it?
I heard a great businessman say this one day. I think it was on social. He said, success means that when I'm 50, 60, 70, and my kids are out of the house, that they still want to spend time with me.
Mm.
It's something I'm working on. Because part of the story that I didn't mention, Adam, is that the best part of this whole thing is that my wife and I and my kids were all back together.
Wow.
So that happened about 2 years ago.
Wow. Completion story. Not one that everyone can say, but that's really cool. Good for you. One piece of advice you would give yourself, the 21-year-old you, Alex.
Learn emotional intelligence at a much younger age. I was too inner focused on just me, what I wanted, what I was trying. That's, you know, as an athlete, you are, right? You're always focused on what you need to do to move forward to get to there. And I just didn't understand how to actually interact with other people, how to network, how to use relationships, build relationships, how to make people feel heard, how to just do all those things that you need to have if you're going to be a successful person, whether it's business, family, a partner, a parent.
Mm. There's one more question I got to ask you. Morning routine.
All right. You ready for this? Okay. Morning routine is this. I'm usually up at 5:30 every morning. I stretch for at least 30 minutes. I do red light therapy. Then I do sauna. I do a cold plunge. And then I'll do either, depending upon the day, I'll get a 3 to 5 mile run in, or I'll do the gym. Now, a really important piece of that is when I'm in the sauna every single day, I do visualizations. I am visualizing exactly where I'm going to be, where I know this company is going. I'm feeling what that feels like. I hope I do this. This is what it feels like when Hostetape is a billion-dollar company. This is what it feels like, what I know this company and where we are going to be. Huge part of that. Then I come back, and that's usually 2 to 3 hours of my morning. Very important. That morning routine, taking care of yourself, all entrepreneurs out there, taking care of yourself is one of the best things that you can do, because at the end of the day, you have all these people, your family, your work, who depend on you. And if you're not taking care of yourself, then how the heck are you going to take care of them?
Yeah. Listen to the flight attendant, put your oxygen mask on first, right? Well, Alex, great having you on. Thanks for giving us this time. Really good interview.
Great to be on. I appreciate it. This was great. Don't let bad sleep hold you hostage.
If you enjoy this podcast, please make sure to subscribe. And to stay updated on everything that the Action Catalyst is up to, make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Action Catalyst Podcast and on Twitter at Catalyst_Action. And thanks for listening.